Now, that's not a bad idea, is it? How are you doing? I hope you are doing well. And by the way, in this series, especially today, a lot of what we're going to talk about, whether you have kids or not, is going to apply. And in fact, today in particular, if you're in any position of influence, you could take parenting and really apply some of these same principles to employees or really wherever God has placed you. But I am excited about this series we are kicking off for the next few weeks, Raising Amazing Kids, because that's a goal, and parenting is truly, by the way, you are probably the best parent ever before you have children. That's when you're a real expert. And then you have the first child. And I remember I never even babysat before. And so I have this child. And the first time my wife left me alone with our first child, it was a horrible mess all the time. I literally was checking to make sure she was breathing. And then she had the poopy diaper, the kind that goes in the hair. And, you know, it was just really, I felt way out of my league. I heard this story recently. Mom and her daughter, her little daughter wanted to do a little present for her. And so she makes her tea. She'd make her tea like she saw her mom and me make every morning. And she brought her up the tea and she said, Mom, I made you tea. And the mom's sipping it and said, oh, this tea is so good. This is so good. She said, I made it just the way that you do. And I boiled the water and the leaves at the same time. And then I strained it and put it in the cup. But I couldn't find the strainer. And so I just used the fly swatter. Yeah. And the mom said, you did what? Little girl, not kidding, she goes, oh, don't worry, I didn't use the new one, I used the old one so I wouldn't ruin the new one. Yeah. You know, when my wife and I first had our first child, people were sort of discouraging, to be honest with you. They're like, they'd see the baby and they'd say, oh, wait until she becomes a toddler. And then the toddler, oh, wait until they're in elementary school. And oh, wait until they're a teenager. And then, you're like, get behind me, Satan. I mean, it really is. People could tend to be discouraging. And often what I believe they were doing is they were extrapolating maybe an experience they had had or experience they thought we would have into the future. And I just want to tell you this, parenting can be an incredible challenge. We have one child that's out of the house and one that's in the house. But I can tell you, it can be a great joy. And the horror stories you hear, sometimes they happen, and I'm going to talk about that. But can I tell you, they don't always happen? And there are some things that we can do that can set an environment that really can be so life-giving for our kids. And in this series, by the way, my wife and I are going to talk about mid-course corrections as well. So some of you are here and like, okay, that's great for the people who have three-year-olds, but I have a 13-year-old, and, you know, I don't know how to fix them, and so I just bring them to church and drop them off here, or, you know. You're not sure how to do that. But you can make mid-course corrections that can make a big difference. You can even do that with your adult kids as well. Well, let's start off with this understanding. I want to look at this, the New Living Translation. It says, children are a gift from the Lord. They really are, but they're not perfect. I know that's hard for those of you. And in fact, by the way, those of you watching Issaquah Duval, you raise your hands as well. Any of you have sort of really young kids, babies, right? Yeah, there's a number of you. And when they're first born, you find this out after a few months, it's always, oh, they're perfect. And we get the sense that they're going to be perfect. And really, they're not. They're perfectly formed in God's image. But those little sinners will keep you up all night. You know? And by the way, guys, if you're married, or assume you might be married at some point, when you see your first child, it is so important when your wife says, isn't he beautiful? To just say yes, you know? Not like, it looks like Papa Smurf and E.T. had a love child. No, that is not a good thing to say, or so I've heard. Anyway, when it comes to children, we need to acknowledge that there can be challenges along the way. And we have so much time to primarily influence them, the 18 years or so, hopefully only 18 years, that they're in the home. It says in Psalm 90, 12, teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Basically what it's saying is, you know what? You have so much time in this life to invest, and one of the greatest investments we know we can make is in family, in parents and spouses, but also our children. And you hear this every once in a while. Someone will be diagnosed with a terminal illness, and they'll say, hey, you got 6 months to live, and boom, they're writing stories to their kids, and they're doing all these incredible things because they understand how precious those moments are. I have an illustration for you, the marbles. Some of you think, oh, we knew you lost your marbles. Now you found them. There are 936 marbles here, and these represent the number of weeks that you have with your children. And it's so important that we understand our responsibility. You're like, hey, I brought these kids to church because we really want to have the church be a great influence. And that's great. But I have five here. It's actually six. If you go to church every week, about six of these 936 are what we can do as a church. And we will steward that well, and we will be a great influence. But most of what we do is to help you to be a better parent. And it goes by quickly. My oldest child is at college, and I remember when she was just a little baby, there's a picture of her there. That's my daughter, Abby, and my wife's sort of funny. My wife is not a saver. You can go back to that one, the one before that, and so this is old and beat up, that little rocking chair, and she has tried to throw it out a number of times, and I keep on bringing it back, just can't let go of that, although it's sort of hard. I don't quite fit in it. Anyway, sort of the middle school years, and then there's my daughter today as she graduated from high school, and now she's off in college. And they go by so fast, but there's such an opportunity there. And God wants to teach us to number our days and to really make them count when it comes to our kids. Well, we're going to be really practical. I'm going to give some broad principles in an introduction today, but we're going to be very practical, hitting specific issues in the next couple of weeks. And today, I'm going to talk about how we leverage, how we use force maximizers, a term that you're probably familiar with, in our parenting. But before we get there, I want to look at this one obvious parenting insight, and that's ultimately you can't control anyone. You can't control anyone. And I know for some of us parents, we try to control everything. And we try this hard. We try to control them through bribes, through threats, through all sorts. My favorite, the leash backpack. Any of you a leash child growing up? I said that once, and someone got very angry, but I thought, hey, I'll say it again. Anyway, but we just want this incredible control. You can't control. And some of you have adult children, and you have incredible guilt about decisions that they're making. Can I tell you this? There is nothing you can do to control another human being. But you can influence them, and that's primarily what we're looking at today. Well, we're going to look at four force maximizers, things that you do. If you do these four things, I truly believe that your parenting will be incredibly more effective than it would be if you didn't. And these are four simple steps. Hopefully, they're fairly intuitive to us as well. But four things that are so crucial in our parenting. Number one is teaching your kids to make good decisions. Now, notice I did say making good decisions for your kids. In fact, if you make all the good decisions for your kids, what you're doing is you're disabling them intellectually And in so many ways, because they won't know how to make good decisions. I literally was talking to a young lady. And when I mean young lady, I'm not talking 16, I'm talking 26 years old. And she came from such a controlling family. She literally couldn't make the most simple life decisions. One of your primary responsibilities is to teach your kids how to make good decisions. Well, you might say, hey, isn't, you know, my primary responsibility to teach them to love Jesus? Well, that's a good decision. See, I want my kids to love Jesus, but I don't want them to love Jesus and live in my basement when they're 35 years old. I want them to make good decisions financially. I want them to make good decisions spiritually. I want them to make good decisions sexually. I want them to make good decisions vocationally and relationally. And that's why it's so important that we teach our kids how to learn. And there are two things that are crucial here, and you might write these to the side, is time in Scripture and time in church. Those are incredibly important because your child will learn to think biblically. It says in Deuteronomy 6, 1 through 2, these are the commands, decrees, laws the Lord directed me to teach you to observe in the land as you are crossing the Jordan to possess it, so that your children and their children after you may fear the Lord your God as long as you live. Moses knew that he wasn't going to be around forever as the nation of Israel went to the promised land. He said, but there are some principles that you can apply. There are some commandments that'll make your life just go so much better. Now, I've heard this, especially in a spiritual sense. Well, I'm going to just let my kids figure it out on their own. I like what it says in Hebrews 12:8, the Message paraphrase. Only irresponsible parents leave children to fend for themselves. God designed you to love and to teach your children. And part of that is to teach them how to think, teach them where to go. An action step for us is to spend our time preparing kids for life and not protecting kids from life. Often we'll do that. There are helicopter parents. Any of you like me, I will admit I am a recovering helicopter parent. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about? Some of you are in full denial right now. You are. You say, I'm not a helicopter parent. And in fact, when my son got a bad grade and I was talking to the principal, I didn't even yell at him. Yeah, you know, because we get overly involved in our kids' life. Now, I'm not talking about influencing. I'm talking about making the decisions for them. This has been a guiding principle for my wife and I, is we want to teach our kids to make good decisions. We see that as our primary role. For example, my daughters are the age they are. We have one in high school, one in college. And when it comes to this whole issue of dating, now in Christian circles, there's all sorts of ideas about dating. There's some people who say, you know, you should never ever date. That's just a horrible concept. And some that say, hey, you should just let your child date whenever they want to. And we've really just, you can do whatever you want to. We've rejected both of those in a sense. Some people will say there was no dating in the Bible. Well, they also had concubines in the Bible and people only bathed once a week, but we're not going to adopt that practice as well. So what we've decided is for our children, is our daughters, we said they can't date until they're 16 years old, because I wanted them to start exploring those relationships while they were in the protective love of their father, who would kill any young... No, the... so the... And by the way, they all have to meet me, the boys. They love it, let me tell you. When my daughters, when they're 16, they can do some group dating, and that's where it starts. Before that, they can go, if there's a dance at the school, they can go to that. I know some of you who were raised Baptist now think I'm going to hell because my daughters go to dances. But we want to teach them how to navigate those relationships while they're in our home. Because don't fool yourselves, they're going to have those kind of relationships. But who's going to guide them How are they going to be guided? It says this in Matthew about God's instruction. Anyone who listens to my teaching and follows it is wise, like a person who builds a house on a solid rock. The rain comes in torrents, and the floodwaters rise, and the winds beat against the house. It won't collapse because it's built on bedrock. But anyone who hears these teachings of mine and doesn't obey is foolish, like a person who built his house on the sand. When the rains came and the floods come and the winds beat against that house, it collapsed with a mighty crash. It says there's two kinds of foundations. There's God and there's everything else. And so we want our children to think biblically. And also another force maximizer is to influence those who are going to influence your kids. That we influence those who are influencing our kids. It says in 1 Corinthians 15:33, don't be misled, bad company corrupts good character. We know this to be true. How many of you had someone when you were growing up who was a bad influence in your life? You were there? How many of you were that person? Yeah, you were that person, weren't you? You were the ones that the other parents warned about. There's going to be influences and should be influences outside of you. By the way, parents who, I hear this every once in a while, and this is my opinion, so no, this is, you can reject this. You can be wrong if you want to. I hear this with children when they're older, and they're like, my children are never, I never out of my sight. It's like, and then they'll say, and by the way, I feel overwhelmed and frustrated. It's not that you're there all the time, but you're choosing who's going to be the influences in their life. That's why I just so am thankful for the team in our children's ministry who does such an incredible job, the staff people in the youth ministry, because these can be such positive influences in your children's life. It's not a question as will they be influenced, but who's going to influence them. It's important that we find that community that's going to influence, and know that whatever community you have will determine quite a bit about their life. One of the scriptures we looked at last week said, "He who walks with the wise becomes wise, but he who associates with fools gets in trouble." Well, another crucial force maximizer is fighting for their hearts. Now, this goes beyond just instructions of do's and don'ts. This is where we relationally connect with our children. Deuteronomy 6, where we're spending most of our time, it says in verses 6 and 7, "These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts." And notice how it talks about imparting them. "Impress them on your children. Talk about them when you sit at home and when you walk along the road and when you lie down and when you get up." Can you read between the lines here what's going on? That there's an incredible amount of time being spent. Two books that I used as a resource. I'm not preaching the books, so you could get these books, and most of the information you definitely won't hear today are Parenting Beyond Your Capacity, and also one called Revolutionary Parenting by George Barna. And in the book Revolutionary Parenting, Barna, who runs a research organization, said that it's not only the quality time, it's the quantity of quality time that we spend with our children. So the question is what are you doing to enhance your child's relationship with you? Oftentimes, the only time our children hear from us is when they get something wrong. You know, it's sort of like, have you ever done this? You know, your kid hits their head on a table, and then you're like, oh, careful, a little too late, right, at that point. We're told in Ephesians 6, "Fathers, don't provoke your children, or do not exasperate your children. Instead, bring them up in the training and instruction of the Lord." And that would go for mothers as well. And I was thinking about that. What does it mean to exasperate our children? I was looking online at Webster's Online Dictionary, and it says anything that aggravates or causes annoyance. Think about that. What am I doing that aggravates my kids? When I'm inconsistent, I know that aggravates my kids. When I'm grumpy, I know that, and some of you are saying, how could you ever be grumpy, Ben? When I bring trouble from other parts of my life to home, when I lead with a no, when my first answer is always going to be a no, and then they have to whine for 20 minutes, and then I give them a yes. One of the biggest shifts that I made, and I'll tell this one, although we're going to talk about mid-course corrections, in my parenting as a dad, is when I decided I'm going to always say yes unless there's a reason to say no. And you say, well, how did that make a difference? I just realized that I was parenting a lot out of fear and a little bit out of control. And so I'd be more inclined to give them a no. But I would lead with a yes unless there was a good reason to give them a no. Another thing that exasperates them is when I make guest appearances in their life. When I try to get involved in a situation, when I really haven't taken the time to know what's on their heart. Here's a good question that can apply to a child, to a parent, or a spouse. How do they feel? How do your children feel? And here's a good follow-up question. How can I make them feel better? What can I do to make them feel better? I was writing down a few things. Time, of course, is a currency of love. To talk with your children, not at them. To encourage more than you criticize. To let them win some battles. Not mocking them. And I see this. My family, our love language in the Sigmund household growing up was nothing but, you know, sarcasm. And so I come by honestly. Some of you are saying, well, you're sort of sarcastic. I've gotten way better. Just got to let you know. This is me better. This is me better. But the mocking, any mocking, even when you're kidding, is almost 100% destructive. Don't mock your kids. They're going to have other people who will mock them plenty. They will spend several years in hell, junior high. And that is a place where oftentimes it's just criticism and criticism. They need you to be there with them, but also for them. George Barna also wrote this in Revolutionary Parenting. He said, "Your impact on your children's lives is proportional to the depth of relationship you have fostered with them." And you know, the three laws of real estate are location, location, location. And this is not original with me, but you read any parenting book, and they'll tell you the three laws of parenting are observation, observation, observation. Not just getting to know general parenting principles, but to know your child. If you have more than one child, you realize, hey, how come they are so different? Because God made them different. And so we are called to become an expert in our children's lives. Questions that I ask are, what do they like? What are they afraid of? What are they really good at? What gives them life? And what do they feel drawn to? See, this helps us, instead of trying to mold them into the person that we want them to be, is to help them discover who Jesus Christ has created them to be. That we say, you know, I'm going to invest, I'm going to fight for their heart. Now, some of you, I just want you to hear this, because this is what you hear. Okay, I'm going to give my child everything they want. No, no, don't do it. Ever, no, no. We're going to talk about that. Is that you don't buy your way into your child's heart. And in fact, oftentimes, parents who lead very busy lives, like most of us, is we will buy things to substitute for time. And by the way, your children will let you do that. But what we're called to do is to go a step deeper and fight for their hearts. A fourth maximizer is when we maximize our own spiritual growth. And you've heard this before, as more things are caught than taught. If you want your child to love God, to be a spiritual champion of sorts, then it has to do with your own spiritual growth. Proverbs 24:3, it says this, "By wisdom a house is built, and through understanding it's established." And in Deuteronomy 6, when it's talking about passing on all these great spiritual truths, about impressing them on your kids, about following these commandments, right in the middle of that is probably one of the most famous verses in the Old Testament. Deuteronomy 6:5, it says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and soul and with all your strength." And so part of the question that we need to ask ourselves is, how are we doing in our own walk with Christ? How are we growing spiritually? By the way, you don't need to be perfect spiritually. And in fact, you want to turn off your kids. I've heard this from adults. "My parents, they acted so holier than thou, and they acted like they never had a problem or never had a mistake." If you want to turn your kids off from faith, all you got to do is pretend you're perfect. But if they can see you growing in your faith, if they can see you saying, you know, getting together, like, you know, we do this whole growth group thing, and this is not a plug for it, but I guess it sort of is, but the idea of you getting together with other people who love God and study the Bible together, your kids will see that, and they'll say, oh, and it'll make a profound difference. When they see you serving, when they see you, maybe for you, a spiritual step is getting baptized. Since you've believed in Christ as an adult, you've never taken the step of being baptized. And your kids will see that. See, that's about your spiritual growth. But do you know what you're doing when you do that? You're raising up kids who will want to follow you as well. Maybe for you, it's reconciling with a parent. I know for me, I shared a little bit of my story. My mom came from a horrible background and suffers with bipolar disorder, just a bunch of things. And so it was incredibly challenging growing up. And one of the things I've learned is that when I go and I see my mom and their care for her, and some of my other brothers and sisters have not been able to do that, is that my kids, they've even asked me the question. They said, "Well, why do you do that?" I say, "One, I love my mom, and I never expected her to be perfect. And two, I always want to do what's right by God. I want to, the Bible says to honor your mother and father, and so I want to do that for grandma." And so remember, when I'm crazy and in a home, you do the same thing for daddy as well. It's sort of funny, as I never realized what an impact. And I don't want to be self-congratulatory, trust me. There are plenty of things that we do wrong, that I do wrong as a parent. But I think one of the things my kids see is me seeking after God. In fact, I had a difficult week, and so I went and I got together with a friend of mine, and we just talked and we prayed together. And my daughter, who's still living at home, she knew that's what I was doing, is that I was just getting together with someone and seeking Jesus in the midst of it. That didn't mean you're perfect. Didn't mean you know every passage of the Bible. But it means, for me at least, that Jesus is enough. Well, I want you to hear the story of a family who at Timberlake started to put God front and center back in their life after a bunch of challenges. And I think that you'll be encouraged by Michael and Lori's story. Take a look at this.